पाठाय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेष्णे। Dear friends, this sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita that we have been studying is mainly devoted to the control of mind. The control of mind is the secret of success in any field of life. And of course, our spiritual life, our life directed to the ultimate goal, certainly depends very heavily on how much control we can exercise over our personality in general, mind in particular. So, Lord was telling that one has to try methodically, gradually and relentlessly. Gradually means the effects would be seen gradually. Immediately the effects will not be seen, but as one proceeds with the practice, the effects will be seen and the mind naturally will go towards various objects which one sees, and that tendency is to be curbed by watching. This watching means one has to have this inner awareness that I am not the mind, I am watching it. So that watchfulness should be exercised as the mind goes to different objects, which happens because of ignorance. We perceive all these objects to be real and the mind goes towards them. And as it goes to the different objects, you have to pull that back. Like the feeling comes, oh, this is my son or my daughter, my dad, my children, and so forth. And the mind goes towards those things. It goes to different other objects, like my football game is going on, my soccer is going on, or a movie that you suddenly remember. The mind tends to go towards all these objects. When one is not watching, one does not realize how strongly the mind goes towards them. When we watch aside, stand aside and watch, that how the mind goes here and there. It can be done, friends, that staying just aloof. A mind is an instrument, let it can go here, there, but you pull it back. you pull it back. Because of the ignorance, it will tend to go. And therefore, the effort should be to bring in the light of knowledge. As it goes to different objects, Shankaracharya, in his beautiful commentary on this verse, the verse 26th, says that as it goes to different objects, you have to do two things there. First is Atma Bhavena Abhasi Kritya, or Atma Bhavanaya Abhasi Kritya. That is, feeling that it is really this self alone is there. It is an illusion that appears like that object. Know that it is illusory. How do you know that it is illusory? Because it doesn't remain. It comes and goes away. That is the meaning of being illusory. The coming and going. This is the nature of those things. And thus one has to impress that self alone is appearing in the form of these persons or objects. And second thing he said, Vairagya Bhavanaya, that is creating a strong sense of dispassion. When one goes towards those objects, well, just think what happens. That last time when I went to those objects, I got entangled. Not that I got any happiness out of it. It is only a bondage and further craving. Further craving was the result. Bondage was the result. And therefore, thinking of these results, don't go to it again. So this is the how the effort should continuously go on. This is how one can gradually bring the mind under control. This is the technique. The only technique available for controlling the mind through this watchfulness. That be watchful. Look where it goes. And tell that this is an illusion. Comes and goes like the objects in the dream. It is, what is the meaning of illusion? How do you realize that something is illusion? If it persists forever, then it cannot be called illusion. Shankara mentions, and this is a very beautiful idea, that if it persists all the time, then there is no point in calling it illusion. How do you know that some experience was illusory? Because it goes away. It vanishes. And then you think, wow, I saw it, but now I don't see it. So that means it was an illusion. Like you saw a rope and you then went there and saw that it was a snake. Now, the rope idea gets replaced by the snake idea. I am just reversing the usually given example that because the illusion can take place in any shape. Not that always snake will appear as rope. Sometimes the rope also can appear as snake. It is just an example to show that we have these experiences which go away, that the experience then is called an illusion. That rope was an illusion because that did not stay on. On examination, it was discovered that it really wasn't there. Similarly, these objects of the world, how are they? They come and go. They have no stability. Even when we are perceiving them, it is continuously changing, and the experience depends on how our senses are. It is brought, it is something that is construed by our senses. And if our senses are different, the world will appear different. There is no reality associated with them, and therefore it is an illusion. We see that somebody that you recognize as my own, my very close friend, my very close relation, when the instrument becomes different, you won't recognize it. As it happens in case of Alzheimer's, the instrument brain that processes this information behaves in a different manner, and therefore the recognition and response, all those things become different. Because it is all instrument related thing. And just as when you see something from or through a particular telescope, then those things appear to be very near. The star that is far away looks like as if it is very near. It is an illusion generated. Now our eyes also have a software that creates a particular sense of distance, and that is matched by our sense of touch, and so both aid the illusion as if that object is there really. But when this program itself gets replaced, then all of that vanishes. When this perception program gets replaced by another perception program, then this idea completely gets replaced, because it is really not there. It is all dependent on these creations of the instrument. Just as a movie that when one watches the movie, it is all as if a very real creation. But it is created by some instruments there. It is not real there. The screen is real. So whenever you get the idea that, oh, that nice banana that I am seeing in the movie, let me go and eat it, what do? It happens very quickly at that time. We don't really feel that we are thinking. But what is happening there? We tell ourselves, oh, that is not a real banana. It is just a picture. It is not worth eating. It is, you cannot in fact go and eat it. It is only screen is there. There is no banana. There is all those objects that you see there. They are not real. Only screen is there. Similarly, that is the meaning of understanding that all these are illusory manifestations of this screen that is self, because that alone remains. See, analyze, it is good to analyze our experience. Like, I see Vishwanath, I see Charles, I see Santosh, I see Ben. Of these, you know, in these experiences, what has changed? Vishwanath, Charles, Jose, Ben, Santosh, they are the changing things. What did not change? I see that I part has not changed. This I alone is appearing as all these different objects. That alone is real. And so just as when the mind was going to get that something on the screen, the banana on the screen, you told yourself, there is only screen, don't rush there. And you did not rush there. Similarly, when the mind is being pulled to some object, some person, then tell the mind that it is really this self alone that is appearing. Don't have to rush to those objects. That is Atma Bhavanaya Abhasi Kritya. A great idea, friends, that know that the self alone is the unchanging aspect of all these otherwise changing perceptions. And second part, Vairagya Bhavanaya, that is generating the dispassion by remembering the effects. That once as a child I probably went to the screen to catch the banana and I didn't get it. I was a fool. So similarly, ponder over the experiences. What happens with our attempt to get these objects in the world? Try. Nothing, because just as there is no banana in the screen, there is no real object here. One keeps on trying and getting frustrated, thinking that next time I will give it a better try. But, if one ponders over the experience, then that feeling of dispassion comes. Oh my goodness, what a fool I have been. Do I want to keep on being fooled by these things? Sri Ramakrishna said that how one should generate this vairagya, this dispassion, and said that if the mind gets a tremendous desire that you cannot control, the mind just wants to grab it, doesn't want to listen. Then he said, I got a desire. Now you see Sri Ramakrishna, that level of perception, what kind of desire there be. But the desire there was for showing these things, explaining these things to us. So he said, I got the desire to eat rasagulla. That Bengali sweet, and people like it a lot, so he thought that let me have rasagulla. So got a few of them, then put one in the mouth and rolled it from one end to the other end of the cheek, from one, and told the mind while doing this, mind, did you understand what is the meaning of eating rasagulla? It is made of the same material as any other food item. The same elements are there also. As are in your body, they are there too. Also, it tastes sweet only for a while. For a while means how long? From the your gets into mouth till it goes down the throat. Up to that only it tastes sweet. After that, the intestine has to do hard work, and that's all. So that is what, and you fool, you got desire for such a silly thing. Okay, once you were fooled, never get such a desire again. So never get fooled again. So that is how one should gradually get over these things. So this is a beautiful idea given here, that that is how the mind is to be slowly brought under control. This slowly is not important here. If you can bring it fast, that is fine. Not that it is the slowly. Slowly means here the gradually. The process doesn't happen. It is very quickly in all cases. But that doesn't mean one should get disheartened. One should keep on making a concerted, relentless attempt to do it. So, with the attempt, gradually one starts sensing the success to some extent. Gradually, the success comes. It is for sure the success comes. And so, what happens with the success? The 27th verse that we saw last time, that prasanta manasam yenam yoginam sukhamuttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahma bhutam akalmasham. To the yogi whose activity has subsided, the activity is the rudimentary or rough translation of this word rajas, shanta rajasam, who is a tranquil mind and identified with Brahman, to that person comes the supreme bliss. What happens is, because of this, the mind starts becoming calm. The desires, they start vanishing. They don't come. And thus what happens? The obstacles to happiness go away and happiness start pouring forth in torrents. Our true nature is bliss. The desires create obstacles in the manifestation of that happiness. And therefore, more the desires, less the happiness. Stronger the desires, weaker the happiness. And this person, having gradually removed the desires, shanta rajasa means that it is not just activity, but desire-propelled activity. Desire is the fuel of that activity. Most of our activities are like that, and therefore this word is used there, that otherwise I am sitting quietly, suddenly get the desire that let me go and watch that movie. Immediately I get up from my chair and then start going to the theater, buy a ticket, see the movie, and then come back. That is the activity that was propelled by desire. Desires are multifarious. Various types of desires are there, and that propel various type of activities. These activities get subsided when the mind becomes calm, and thus the spontaneous outburst of happiness starts reigning in our life. Otherwise it is always a sense of that thirst, passion. I want this, I need to get this. And thus the life is full of a torturous running about from pillar to post. Nothing has happiness to give you. The objects could give you happiness if they have it. If they don't have it, how are they going to give it to you? Since it is not there, you are not likely to get it. What do you get by these repeated attempts? Frustration is the result of it. So, in this person, that frustration is not there, because he knows that there is nothing to be gotten from there. And as this idea becomes intensified, the happiness becomes more and more pronounced. It is, those who have given up the running after all these objects, how happy their life becomes. Why? Because the impediments to the inner happiness, they have gone from life. So the more they reduce from the life, the more and more happiness will show up in life. So that is they, and also Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham, the person starts feeling that sense of oneness with the universe. That is Brahma Bhutam, that I am a one with Brahman, or I am part of this whole reality. I am connected with it. I am related to it. So that becomes the feeling of oneness there. That not that I am the enjoyer and the world is enjoyed. That division is the source of all misery. I the enjoyer, world the enjoyed. And when this division is transcended by the practice of this control of mind, you see gradually the feeling of oneness becomes more and more intense. Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham. And that is another adjective is given there, pure, without any blemish. How one acquires blemishes, that also is because of the intense desires. We had seen earlier, and our experience in the world also goes for that, that why a person commits sins in this world, why a person becomes criminal in this world, because of the desires. Intense desires which cannot be easily satisfied gradually makes a person more and more angry and frustrated, and thus the crimes take place. That greed, I want, and there is no end to it. Therefore, if I get $1 million, I start having greed for 10 millions. That is how we see all these highly educated people. They have committed horrible crimes because of these unsatiable desires. Desires can never be satisfied by putting objects in it. That is the problem, basic problem that is associated with it. I will, and the desires as it is, there is no good or bad. Only one desire is good. The desire to get rid of all desires is the only good desire. And there is no otherwise a good desire. Maybe there are some desires which are not as bad as other desires. Like a desire to murder somebody is not a good desire. To help somebody will be a better desire. But that also is not a completely good desire either. Because there is this idea, I am the helper, that person is to be helped. That sense of superiority, I am helper, that comes there. It is, therefore, the idea that let me help the world is better than let me hurt the world. But that's about it. And that better desires may be able to eradicate the other desires. So they should be cultivated, but eventually they also will have to be renounced. It is like taking antibiotic. You have some distinct germs inside, and so what, even though your antibiotic is not a very desirable thing, But then you have bacteria inside and you are terribly sick, so you take them to remove this troublesome thing. So when they are removed, then you do not keep on taking the antibiotics forever. You say, well, stop, it is that their job is done, the course is finished, and not that I have to keep on taking it. So, similarly, to get rid of some worse desires, some other desires may be helpful. But they are also a problem. They are also not really good. Just as antibiotics are not really a beneficial thing, if there is no bacteria, not that you have to keep on taking it, that is itself a damaging thing. So, similarly, any desire, friends, has this problem associated with it. So, therefore, only one desire is good, to get rid of all desires, which actually mean being one with God or seeing God in a devotional fashion, in a theistic way, the same idea that I shall see God. That desire is the only good desire. As Sri Ramakrishna used to say, that therefore that is not to be counted amongst desires. That our George used to ask this question, that well, this is also a desire, is it not, to see God? All desires are to be given up, but then to realize God, is it not a desire? Well, this is now playing on the words, because it is the desire to get rid of all desires. How can you call it a desire? Since we don't have a better word, we are using the word desire there. It is really not desire. So, that is this person, as the gets rid of desires, therefore all the criminal tendencies, they also vanish from this person's mind. Otherwise, there are all the seeds of sin. And people therefore take sometimes pride in it, in announcing, well, after all, we are born sinners. Being born sinners, what shall I be doing? I shall be sinning. That being my nature, what can I do? I am born sinner. I am sinner. And unless God emancipates me from the sin, what can I do? I will keep on doing the sin. But while we see that, do we like the result of the sins? We don't like that at all. That when the effect comes to us, then we say, no, no, why did I do it? I shouldn't have done that. And in fact, we say, let God be punished, because God has made me do it. I didn't do it myself. That God had made me sinner, so I am doing it. The God should be punished for that. In Sanskrit, there is a beautiful couplet that says that punyasya phalam icchanti, punyam nechanti manavaha. That we human beings, we desire the result of all the good charitable activities, meritorious deeds. We don't desire to do the meritorious deeds, but want the results of the meritorious deeds. And papasya phalam nechanti, we do not like the results of the sinful acts, but papam kurvanti yatnatah, but go on doing the sinful actions with great relish. That is the problem. So this goes away from the mind of this person, and thus, see, the calmness, composure, the serenity, the bliss all become apparent in this person. So, by control of mind, this becomes the result. And do we want to then control the mind or not? What charge? No? Yes, okay, good. Triveni? Yes, is it not? Good. So we want to control the mind because we want these results. That serenity, bliss, happiness, and getting rid of all sinful tendencies. This is we want. And therefore, when we want a result, we should do what gives us that result. And that cause of all this is control of mind. Then the next verse, it also emphasizes this idea that one has to keep on doing this effort relentlessly by applying the idea of devotionally connecting oneself to God or our true self. Whatever word you, some may not like the word God, but whether you like it or not, if you don't like that, use any other word. But connecting that, our mind to that, that is the way to gradually bring about this control. Yunjan evam sadatmanam yogi vigatakalmashah sukhena brahma sansparsham atyantam sukhamashnute. This is the 28th verse. The yogi, entirely free from taint, constantly controlling the mind thus, attains easily the infinite bliss of union with Brahman. That attach yourself to Brahman like this all the time. Evam means as has been described earlier. Keep on doing this effort. How long does it take? How long does it take? Our Srila can ask this question that, well, how long should I, my med school course is 4 years, so this there should be a timeline for this, is it not? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and then I will finish it than that and get my graduation, and thus I will be a person with controlled mind and having attained the fulfillment. But you should tell some timeline. It is how long? Go on doing it till it happens. That's all. It may happen today or it may happen after 1,000 births. But the effort must be continued. Make the effort as if it should happen this very moment. This very moment it can happen. Say that I am Brahman. I am the Self. This moment all the bondages will go away. This very moment know that I am not this little body, not the mind. I am not anything limited. I am Brahman. I am the all-pervading reality. I am divine. And this moment, you are that. Now, it doesn't take then anything. But if it doesn't work once repeating it, go on repeating it. Swami Vivekananda says, keep on saying, I am that. Even if you fail 1,000 times, get up again and say, I am that. Yes, because that is the truth. And so, gradually one will get to this understanding. Evam means in this fashion, and gradually things will be this vigata kalmashah, that all the kalmashah, that is all the blemishes, all the karma that will be exhausted. That is how Swami Vivekananda in his Song of Sannyasin says that thus day by day this karma's way will go away, and you will, as it goes, the results will be same. Because there is this concomitant relationship between the two. And concomitant relationship means a change. When A and B are connected with a concomitant relationship, then a change in A gets reflected in B too. A change in B occurs according to the change in A. Like you have this switch here, that it is connected to these bulbs. So you press it, the bulbs light. If you press it the other way, the bulbs become no light there. But it doesn't mean that the relationship is concomitant, in the sense that harder you press the switch, brighter becomes the light. That is not the case. It is not a concomitant relationship. If you say that I will press the switch half and let the light be half, no, it is not tuned, made like that. There is that other switch is, to some extent, that concomitant relationship is there. It is a dimmer. So, the more you turn, the brighter it becomes. The less you turn, the lighter or the darker it becomes. So, therefore, this is a concomitant relationship. So, our getting rid of this sense of limitedness and this karma that we are bound with, when that is reduced to that extent, the joy will start flashing in life. So the efforts will bear fruits right away, to the extent you go. Like you are going to a very cold country. So the closer you move, the things start becoming cooler and cooler. The farther you go, well, that becomes the cold will be less and less. This is just an example. Don't stretch it too far. If you are going far away from North Pole, you reach South Pole and it is equally cold, is it not? It is just to give you an idea that the distance between what you desire and yourself goes on decreasing, and you start feeling, therefore, the results or the effects of that in the positive way. So, it is said here, Sukhena Brahma Sansparsham. That, how is that? Sukhena. The more and more happiness. Why it is said? Because the idea of giving up these pleasures appear to be very, very difficult. Many of you must have heard the Sunday lecture given by Swami Tyagananji last Sunday. I was not here, but I read this synopsis. Must have been a very beautiful, illuminating talk, that the idea of giving up, and it is very difficult, and so forth, these are myths. Renunciation myths was the title of his talk. And you see that the it is a myth that renunciation is very difficult. It is, we do many more difficult things to hold on and to run after. And giving up is in fact easier. What is easier?
Carry a huge load on your head, is it easier? Or to throw it and move on? What is easier?
It is like that. We carry a huge load. Keep on carrying it, thinking that someday it will bring pleasure. And go on increasing it. If just because I feel that I am not getting happiness, get one more load. Yes, let me get a husband or a wife or children. One more load. Then let me get a big house. Add one more load. Then let me get a few children. Add one more load. Then let me get more grandchildren. Add more one load. And each time we add the load more and more, thinking that that will make us happy. But renunciation is much easier, that you remove the load. What will happen? The more the load you remove, what happens? Are you not more comfortable? It is as when I was climbing some of the peaks in Himalayas, then all those belongings, the bedding and clothes and some food to eat and all, we took it with us, and as we were walking, all of that started feeling so heavy as we were climbing the mountains. So the lesser the weight, every little thing that we got rid of, we felt so happy. Wow! Even a water bottle gone, you know, felt it's because that much load is reduced. So the lesser the load to carry, the happier we will be. So in that sense, it is sukhena. Happily you can get rid of those things. It is the idea of getting tied to many things is not getting us anywhere in bringing happiness in our lives. The lesser the ties, the more we are happy. The more these chains around us, the more bound we become. All those things that we are afraid of renouncing, what are they? If you take a quick look at that, they are all so many different chains tied to us. The more the chains, more bound we are. The lesser the chains, the lesser bound we are. Isn't it very simple? But we make most simple things terribly complicated and think that renunciation is difficult and all that. And the other things that we do in life are much more difficult. To earn money, is it easy? You don't get money for free. How much work we have to do for it? And go on working to earn money. Is it easy? It doesn't come easy. Let me build a house. It doesn't come easy. You have to work hard for that. So everything is so difficult. And giving up is easy. And every time we add more things, more fear comes in life. Then we need a security because we have acquired lot of things. To keep those lot of things, now we need a bigger house. Now bigger and such house, you therefore apply that security company. Then maybe the thieves may hoodwink that security things, or you do something else. More and more bondages get added on in our life that does not bring happiness. Whereas atyantam sukham ashnute, when you feel the contact, connection with your real nature and the Brahman, that is the source of all bliss, and thus one feels the intense atyantam, the word used by Bhagavad Gita. Atyanta means it is a superlative. That supreme bliss is experienced by this person. And these are not just mere words. We have the lives of great sages who exuded happiness just by their presence. They would usher so much of happiness in the surroundings that others also can palpably feel that. Just as if there is a big fire, you feel the heat of it. And similarly, such a real happy person is amongst us, then we feel the bliss of that happiness being scattered all around. So that is how the topic will continue, and then after we will gradually see that the Arjuna will have later on a very important question about it, that is it possible, it looks very difficult and so forth. We shall discuss those things by the grace of God as we proceed. Any questions? Okay, so I will conclude with the closing prayers, but before that some announcements. This Sunday, after the our regular Sunday service talk, there is an important music concert. A wonderful violin player is Milinda Raikar. He will be performing, accompanied on tabla by Nitin Mitta. So you are invited to attend that. And also a spiritual retreat is coming up. It will be on June 26th. Swami Atmagyanananda will be giving this retreat on a very beautiful story of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And you are the one has to enroll to attend that retreat. It is a day-long retreat, so you have to enroll for that. So those enrollment forms are in the book room. Naomi will help you to get that. Gita Sugita Kartavya किमन्यशास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिःसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।